of our lives as one who belongs to Christ. And I'm going to deal with that last part in more detail in next week's message. But in verse 26, what we learn here is that it was at this time at Antioch that the disciples, the followers of Christ, the disciples were called Christians. This is the first time in the book of Acts we've come across this word, that we've come across this name. It's not found in the Gospels. Before this time, those who followed Christ, followers of Christ, were known as believers. They were known as disciples. They were known as saints. They were called saints, yes. They were known as brethren. That's both male and female. They were known as brethren. They were also known, as we read earlier in the book of Acts, as those of the way. But this is the first time we come upon the word and the name Christian. Now, going back to what I earlier said, most of the Bible scholars that I've read, and I think most of what is taught about the word Christian, is that it was those around them who called them Christians. And they gave him that name because it was contemptuous, mocking them, because they claimed Christ as their leader, the following Christ. But I've always believed in, have been taught, that we look at the context in understanding we call ourselves today, if we're of Christ, that we are Christians. Many people would call themselves Christians, and they call many groups Christian, and we know that they're not. We know that they don't behave that way. So what's the significance of this then? What is the significance of what we find in our text here? When Barnabas had found Paul, same person, he brought him to Antioch. And they spent an entire year at Antioch of Syria. They met with the church. And they taught considerable numbers. And then it says, and the disciples were first called Christians at Antioch. In Antioch. Well, let's unpack this. Let's look at this a little bit. I want us to go to center on the word called. And they were called. And the disciples were called, first called Christians in Antioch. Now the Greek word that is normally used, that you see when you see the word call, we are the ecclesia, the church. We're the ecclesia, which means the gathered together ones or the called out ones. The called out one. So that comes from the Greek word kaleo, to call. The word that is used here, though, does not come from the root word kaleo. Instead, the word that is used here is, I'll put it in English here. Instead of the Greek, of the Z. Krematiso is a word that is translated called here. Krematiso almost always in the New Testament. When it's used in the New Testament, it is almost always, I gotta get a decent one here. It is almost used in the context of divinely called. Not just called, but divinely called. So I think Luke is giving us a hint here when he uses this word in verse 26 rather than kaleo, rather than ekkaleo. If you look at Matthew chapter 2, verse 12, Luke 2:26, Acts 10:22, and then the book of Hebrews, that word chromatiso is the one, or its derivative is the one that is used there. And if you look at those verses, remember what we read in Matthew chapter 2 in verse 12? I think it's Matthew 2, verse 12 that I want. No, Matthew 2:15. Excuse me, Matthew 2:15, not 12. He remained there, Joseph and Mary, he remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet. Out of Egypt I called my son. And the Greek word that is used there is that word. God called, divinely called, my son, Matthew 2:15. And then you look at Luke chapter 2, verse 26. It says there, I think I got that one wrong too. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male that opens a womb shall be called, that word that is used, is the one that used there, shall be called holy to the Lord. It means that it's divine call. The call by God. And then we came upon the word, that same word is used in Acts 10:22. They said Cornelius, a centurion, a righteous and God-fearing man, well spoken of by the entire nation of the Jews, was divinely directed. The word that is used there is that one. It was divinely called by a holy angel to send for you to come to his house and hear a message from you. So that, and in Hebrews, in the book of Hebrews, is the only places that this word, particular word, is used for divinely called. So, this word, called, chromatizo, is in the context of a divine calling. This word that is used here is what we call in the Greek an aorist infinitive. And it's an aorist infinitive in what we call the active voice. It's not passive, but in the Greek, and our translations do not show that, it's an aorist infinitive. Active voice, but unfortunately, the King James, the Authorized Standard Version, and the New American Standard Bible, which I told you before, I believe that is closest to the Greek and the Hebrew and the Greek that we can get, it also does not translate it the way it reads in the Greek. Instead, they translate it as an aorist infinitive passive voice. And the disciples were called, were first called Christians in Antioch. They, as I said, they translate it as if it were a passive voice infinitive. Thus, they are incorrect. Because in the Greek, it is an aorist infinitive, but it's in the active voice. And this is significant, brothers and sisters. Now, one other technical matter here. Both words, disciples and Christian, are in what we call, in the Greek, are in what we call the accusative case. And this is significant to see. Disciples and Christian both are in the accusative case. And this means because of the active infinitive here, that aorist infinitive active voice, because of the active infinitive, what we have here is known, which the translations do not see it that way, translate it and see it that way. What we have here, because disciples and Christians are both in the accusative case, along with an active infinitive, what we have is what we call a double accusative. They're both in the accusative. And the reason why I'm bringing this out, brothers and sisters, because this is significant to understand the context. What that means is, when it's a double accusative like this, is that literally, I'm going to give you a literal translation of this verse. A literal translation would read this way. They called the disciples Christians first in Antioch. That brings up the question, who is they? Now remember, context is important and should not be ignored. Who is the they? Is it those around them, like they want to say, that they're being contemptuous and mocking the followers of Christ? Is that they? I submit to you that it is not. If you look at the context, keep this in context. Grammatically speaking, this verse indicates that the name Christian was given to the disciples first in Antioch by Barnabas and Saul, who we know as Paul. They were the ones that called the disciples Christians. Barnabas and Saul. Thus, I agree with Brother Garrett Reese and Brother Donald Nash that it was based upon this word that is used, which in all the context of when this word is used, it refers to a divine call to be by God. So when that word is used and in that context, yes, indirectly, it is God that has had them use this name. But it's through Barnabas and Saul. They are the ambassadors of Christ. That they, Barnabas and Saul, called them Christians in Antioch. And from then on, followers of Christ were known as Christians. But it was in Barnabas and Saul, through divine inspiration, that called the disciples Christians. As Brother Gareth Reese points out, as he said, and as I brought out, the word call is an infinitive. So what does an infinitive do? Even in English, what does an infinitive do? In the Greek, it does the same thing. An infinitive must lean on the main verb of the sentence. Now, as a matter of fact, as Brother Gareth Reese brings out, the only finite verb, not infinite, but the only finite verb in the sentence is the one translated, it came to pass. All the rest of the verb forms in this passage are infinitives. Gathered together is an infinitive. Taught is an infinitive. Called is an infinitive in the Greek. The ones who are acting in all these infinitives are they. Well, if you look at the context, who's the they? It's Barnabas and Saul. You go back up to that. And when he had found him, Barnabas, he brought him to Antioch. And for an entire year, they, Barnabas and Saul, Barnabas and Paul, they met with the church and taught considerable numbers. And the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch. A good literal translation, again, as Brother Gareth Reese brings out, would be this. And it happened to them also for a whole year to be assembled with the church and to teach a considerable crowd and to call firstly in Antioch the disciples Christians. As Brother Gareth Reese said, the idea that Paul and Barnabas are the ones who named the disciples Christian does justice to this word. It does justice to the divine call in the word call, it does justice to the active infinitive. Barnabas and Saul were the ones that named them Christians and that first called them that. Now, people want to go back to Isaiah chapter 62, verse 2, and make this the answer to that, to verse 26, that it is the Isaiah 62, 2 is a prediction for Acts 11, 26. I do not believe that. The reason why I don't believe that, because when you look at the whole chapter of Isaiah chapter 62, there are actually a total of 6 new names given. Not one, 6 new names. We don't have 6 new names here. We only have one. It's not a prediction from Isaiah chapter 62, verse 2. So we shouldn't use that as a text, as many people like to do. Now, over the years, this has caused, and the disciples, and they, firstly, were first called Christians in Antioch. Over the years, this has caused no end of strife to many in our church groups. What's the name that the church should be called? I've been taught this, I was taught, and many of you may have over the years. What's the name that the church should be called? Christian Church? Christian Church? Church of Christ? Christ Church? You realize how many splits have come from various congregations in various church groups over that issue. Which one? Now, what I've learned growing up over the years, it was Church of Christ. That's what we use. Christian Church wasn't biblical. Even Christ Church was not biblical. It's only Church of Christ. And I used to believe that as well. That's what I was taught. But then I came to study the word more. And I learned this in Acts class in Bible college. It took me a long time to get through to this, because I still believe that Church of Christ, that's it. Now, the most common way in the Greek language to denote ownership or possession. Was by the genitive case ending of a noun. Christian, genitive case ending of a noun. In English, however, that's it. No, I don't like to say that. You may not have been taught this or known this. In English, there's 3 ways to express. In Greek, there's only one. In English, there's 3 ways to express ownership or possession. You know what those ways are? 3 ways to express that. Let me give you an example. I've been studying Aristotle lately in his ethics and politics. So I'll give you an example of 3 ways to express ownership or possession. So you can see that should it be Christian Church, Church of Christ, or Christ Church? So the 3 ways. One is with an apostrophe S in English. So I would say Aristotle's philosophy, apostrophe S. Or I could say the philosophy of Aristotle. Or I could say Aristotelian philosophy. And I've known of all three ways, of it being called all three ways. But that three ways in the English to express ownership or possession. Whose philosophy is it? Aristotle's philosophy, Postrius. Philosophy of Aristotle? Whose philosophy is it? His. He owns it. It's his philosophy. Aristotelian philosophy? It's his philosophy. What does this mean? You see the difference? There is a difference, apostrophe yes, of, and we add I-A-N to Aristotle, we have Aristotelian. We add I-A-N to Christ, and we have Christian. We say Church of Christ. We say Christ Church, apostrophe S. There is a difference. But in essence, brothers and sisters, it expresses the same idea. Thus, to put it in a nutshell for us, either one of the three is biblical. Christ Church is biblical. Whose church is it? Christ. Who owns it? Christ. Church of Christ? What does that mean? Expresses the same idea. It's his church. He owns it. The same thing with Christian church. Took me a long time to see that. Neither one of the three is biblical. Why? Because, brothers and sisters, who owns the church? Christ does. It's his possession. It's his bride. Christ owns the church. We don't own the church. And the reason why I bring this up, because there are so many out there today, so many leaders of churches, those call themselves pastors, what have you, who think that it's their church.
How about Church of God through Christ?
Church of God through Christ? Yeah, that's a little... I suppose you could say that, but it's not a term that used in the scriptures as such. But Christian is, churches of Christ is, in Christ church is. Also, church of the firstborn is used there. And followers of the way, what it comes down to is this. It's Christ Jesus that owns the church. The church belongs to him. He bought it. Scriptures tell us that he bought the church with his blood. So, brothers and sisters, what that means is we are the church. Wherever Christians gather together, true Christians gather together, they are the church. He owns it. He bought and paid for it. So ultimately, who's the head of the church? Am I? Is Stuart? Is Jeff? Bill? Who's the head of the church? You can only have one head. Not several, one. Who's the head of the church? Christ. It's his. He owns it. But so many are acting like it's not his. They want to act like it's their church. He's not the head, I'm the head. Really? No. Not what the church is. But here's the other thing as well. This building is not the church. Or any other building is not the church. Now I know, and this is why over the years I've always had a hard time saying or hearing said, are you going to church? See you at the church. See you at church. And other such phrases. Now I know some people say, preacher, you're being picky. That, you know, that's just the way we talk. However, let me get you to think about this. Could it possibly be, because we have used such terminology as that, that we've gotten used to such terminology, that we sometimes forget, you and I, we are the church, and He is the head, not the building, not wherever you want to gather. But so many want to put it on, you know, the place that they gather, and they're in control of it. And finally, as I also learned in Bible college, how they got the name Christian, even though I do believe it was through Barnabas and Saul, and many would dispute that and what have you, how they got the name of Christian is not as important as the way, and we're going to see this next week, as the way in which they lived up to it. How did the ancient world, how did they come to see them as Christian? How did they begin to know that they're Christian? That they're a follower of Christ? The ancient world in the first century, they saw it by their lifestyle, that they followed Christ, that they obeyed His teaching. And that's going to lead to my next point next week. Because that word, Christian, is being bandied about, and they want to say, and I mentioned this before, Jesus gets us. Well, yes, He does get us. But what does that mean? Well, I believe in Him. Okay, I believe in Him. I'm a Christian. Really? What does that mean? It's true that Jesus gets us. But exactly how? And what does that entail? And we're going to look at that next week. Because another term that's been bandied about that we know has been bandied about over the years is, I'm a born-again Christian. Are you a born-again Christian? Here's the thing. If a person is born again, biblically, scripturally, then he or she is a Christian. If a person is a Christian, biblically, then he or she is born again. That's scripturally speaking. Jesus told us that. So next week we're going to examine and look at exactly, what is a Christian then? How can one determine a Christian? We get it right here. We're going to see that right here. Many people claim and say that they are. Does that make it so? I don't think so. So we'll begin to look at that next week. The stand we're going to sing, how Jesus said one of the ways that we'll know. Remember what he said, the greatest commandment? He said, I give you a new commandment. You love one another just as I have loved you. That's his new commandment. They'll know we are Christians by our love. But people don't want to understand either that when we sing this, they'll know we are Christians by our love, what that entails. There's conditions in that too.